Ian Hunter live with Mick Ronson. Does it get any better than this, Ryan?
I wouldn't know, AD. I don't own this record. As a big a fan I am of Ian Hunter, I don't have this record.
You got to be kidding me.
Is this Welcome to the Club?
This is Ian Hunter Live.
It's just called Live?
Yeah. Oh, it is Welcome to the Club. I never looked at that. Don't they call that? I never even knew it had a title. I've had this record for 20 years.
Wow. I taught you something about that record.
Well, actually, mine's called Welcome to the Club.
Oh, yeah, you got a cutout. Yeah, you got a cutout there.
I swear to God, I never even know. It's like Ian Hunter Live. That's the name of the record. Oh, that ruins everything.
And Mick Ronson's on it, too.
Mick Ronson's all over this.
Yeah, I got to get this.
Yeah, he co-produced it with Ian Hunter. But, dude, right? I mean...
And they are doing Walking with a Mountain.
Walking with a Mountain. And Rock and Roll Queen. They do a medley.
Oh, a little mashup.
Yeah, right? So you get the best of both. But Mick Ronson kills it on this. He killed it on the whole tour, man.
Yeah?
Amazing. Just great.
There we go. Ian Hunter Live. Shall we?
1980.
1980.
I was young and good looking then, Ryan.
Oh, what happened?
I don't know.
let's get cracking here.
You after that.
I like cracking.
Release the Kraken!
Alright, everybody! Tonight, what do you say we have a rock and roll party?
Come on, boy!
Heavy Road Records show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Let's rock and roll, yeah!
Shabby Road Records show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, hey, Labba!
Hey, Labba!
The Shabby Road Records show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and now, people in Virginia know him as, yeah, that's him, officer. But we just call him A.D. Adams.
That's right, that's right. Well, vinyl freaks unite. Music lovers gather round. Gormandizers of showbiz shenanigans and bullshit, come hither, motherfuckers. Well, you want good quality entertainment? Don't come looking here, pal. All you're getting is a couple of drunk spinning records. Ain't that right, Ryan?
Okay. Yes, indeed. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Episode 139 of the Shabby Road Show here. We're excited. We got some great records to play for you tonight, as per usual. And we also, as per usual, have Miss Liz Morgan running the controls over there.
I know.
I didn't get a kiss. I didn't get a kiss over
there. Yeah, she usually makes out with everybody before we're done. Yeah. She's awesome. We love our Liz.
And if you want to get some personalized lip gloss, go over to nameonanything.com, AD, and do all your shopping there.
Nameonanything.com. That's right, Ryan. And you know, as much as I take pride and love my record collection, I also have a horror movie collection, Ryan.
A horror movie?
You know that horror movie. I got every horror movie ever made on DVD. But like having so many records, which one to pick? Which one to pick, right? When you want to watch a flick, it's like there's so many. And it's like, am I in a mood for something like real? Like you know, gory or like horror comedy. Like, how do you tell, right? And the stack's so big, you know, when they're alphabetical. So you got to have a system. So I got a hold of the guys, nameonanything.com, and they made me labels with letters G, 1 through 5. G for gore. C for creepy, 1 through 5, you know, on a scale from 1 being the, you know, worst. And so, et cetera, et cetera. S for scary. Ooh, right? And then underneath, they'll let you know it's got the numbers. My favorite category is B, Ryan. B for boobs. Boobies. I'm a B3 to B5 kind of guy. So anyway, if you want a bit of side boob, that's like B1.
Yeah.
You know, gotcha. B1, like under boob. But a 5B rating, Ryan, it's a gore fest boobapalooza. So... You know, killing and boobies go together like hot dogs and baseball. So you can get your slasher flicks or any of your flicks organized, rated, and ready with stickers from labels from nameonanything.com.
And you'll save 10% if you use the promo code SHABBY when you put your order together. Just tell them we sent you over here. Over at nameonanything.com, great group of people over there working hard for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They deserve better ads than we're giving them, I suppose, don't they?
Yeah, they most certainly do.
But, okay, I'll work on that.
But hey, we give them a lot of long ad.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's airtime and precious airtime.
But I mean, it's the best live read in the business, AD, what you're doing, and it's really the Lord's work.
Thank you.
It is. Yeah, let's give a quick shout out to a couple of our friends who are hanging out with us here tonight. We got Crash Daddy.
Yeah.
Back again.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
And we love you back, brother. He's brought with him a new friend of ours, great guy. We've been hanging out for the first hour
just
together.
Shooting the shit, having a million laughs. We got Bear in the house.
Hey.
Bear is not a small man.
No.
He is not a small man.
What size shoe is it?
18.
And
they glow in the dark.
18. There's two of those fuckers. Two of them shoes. They got to weigh as much as me. Just the shoes.
I was born wearing a size 7.
Wow.
Man. Your poor mother.
We got to have – you're going to come on as a guest. We got to have you on as a guest one of these nights, man. We're going to set you up. That's going to happen. Bear does comedy around the Valley and elsewhere. So
cool.
There should be a lot of fun. So we're going to do that. And that's Liz over there too, huh?
Yeah, Liz.
We didn't say hi to – her sidekick, though.
No, we did not.
Sal 5000.
Oh, don't involve me in that freak show.
Oh, that's horrible.
You're in. You're in all the way,
it's
Sal.
It's too late.
Sorry.
It's too late.
Nothing you can do. No backing out now. Oh, that horny little minx.
So, AD, tell me about your mystery box here tonight.
Yeah, let me tell you about my mystery box. Ryan, my mystery box is so great, its Roman name is Fantasticles.
Excellent.
Yeah. I've got one of my selections of my three making their debut appearance here on the Shabby Road Record Show. And continuing our mutual, I got to say mutual, I got to include you, our mutual current love affair with all things late 60s psychedelia pop.
Love it.
/ rock, / prog, / all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a girl-led group with roots in St. Louis, Ryan, right around your neck of the woods.
St. Louis, Missouri.
But emerging from L.A. out of 1969. It's going to be a good one. Really, really great song that I love. Love this song. I've loved it forever.
1969.
Okay. Yep. And Ryan, one you will love. Get your mystery box ready. You're going to want to borrow this one. So empty yours out. You're going to want to take this one home. I promise you.
Okay.
But this one's also from 1969 and also from a kind of a proggy psychedelic band from England, if you will.
Across the pond, are they?
Across the pond. Also, number three, my third pick, punk, dude. Just the way you like it. The way it was supposed to be. Big, dumb, stupid, and fun from New York, 1977.
Beautiful.
Bam. Beautiful. Awesome. You're going to love it. I got a great box.
Well done.
Says Beyonce.
That's right. You do have a great
box at you.
I shake my box at you.
Yeah.
Box at
you. We got to write that. We got to write that song. We're writing a song for Beyonce.
I'm like a verse in.
Yeah.
I got one verse done.
Yeah.
Going to hit up Greg Fox for some keyboards and Ricky for some programming.
Right. Yeah, that'd be great. So what do you got in your box there?
I have got a great theme for my box, and it's albums that terrify me.
Uh-oh. Oh, so it would be a T1 through 5.
Yes, terrifying. Yes, indeed.
Excellent.
Indeed. And I'll tell you, I'll give you some clues on what's in there after we give a shout-out to a good friend of the show's who stopped by the ShabbyRoadRecordShow.com page and purchased a couple of beers for us.
Oh, are you kidding?
I'm speaking of Judd Peterson, a new member of the Shabby Academy.
Right. Welcome aboard. You're going to regret this in the morning.
He swung by the website, picked us up a couple of cold ones, and the way he did that was he saw that big old frosty mug of beer right there on the Shabby page and clicked on the PayPal link and funneled the funds directly into the fridge, which Liz takes right out of there and goes to the Circle K.
Mm-hmm.
And gets whatever Judd
There's
wants.
There's one right there. My jug is empty. Right?
You need a handle on that.
I do.
So thank you very much, Judd Peterson. You rock, dude.
Thank you,
and
Judd, yeah.
You guys can do that, too. Just visit the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com.
Well, that's awesome.
All right, my mystery box. So I am kind of working in the late 70s into the 80s here on this one. Starting with a classic record from a classic band. We've heard this band before on the show once or twice. Not often enough, if you ask me. So I brought one of their records that terrified me.
Really?
Yes.
It's got to be like King Diamond or somebody, right? Like,
and then we'll move on to something in the early 80s.
That's one of my guesses.
That terrified me.
Like terrifying, like Marie Osmond terrifying?
There's lots of ways to describe what's
fucking scary, dude.
What it is that terrified me.
Right?
I thought most of the 80s.
Actually, she looks pretty good now. You seen them commercials she's making? Yeah, I totally like see her makeup.
She does look good for her. Yeah. She's got to be 60, right? Or 55?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she looks looking great.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
And then my last one is late 80s, and we're going to have a lot of fun with this one. It's I don't want to give too much away, but it just suffice to say that the cover terrifies me, and it's the late 80s, and you just look at that and go, oh, God.
One of my records is an interesting cover issue.
Nice.
Yes.
All right. The only thing left to do now is to see who's going to go first. And Liz, of course, has the two playing cards, red for AD, black for Ryan. And we're going to make our good special new friend, Bear, say right or left hand to determine which one in this two-card Monty is going to come up.
Left hand from my side or from your side?
From your side.
From my side. So right would actually be the right.
Yes, right would be right.
Okay. Got you.
Yes. So what's it going to be?
Tell Liz.
Right hand, Liz.
Yes. What a voice.
What a voice. We got to have you do promos for the rest of the
black
night.
Black for Ryan.
Black for Ryan.
Right on for the black, Ryan.
Yeah. Me and Bear. Black side. You need to come over on this side.
Hey, nobody's recruiting anything here. Let's just rock, okay? You fuckers.
So records that terrified me. Okay, a couple things happened over the weekend, and that's what spurred this whole thing on. My older brother Kevin came in. And this is a record that Kevin got in probably 1978. Comes out in 1977. I'm thinking Kevin picked this up in 1978. And I held it up to him. I'm like, hey, check this out. You had this. We had this as we were kids back in the 70s, you know. And I would have been 5 years old, maybe 6. And he would have been 8, 9, something like that. So he looked at that cover and he's like, that's a great record, but I hated that cover. I go, because it scared you? He's like, it scared the shit out of me. And I'm the younger brother. And I was like, I was way more scared of this cover.
It's cool
than
he
you.
Admitted it, though. Takes a man to admit it.
And he bought it because it features two classic songs. And I'm talking about We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions.
Oh, that album cover? Really? You were scared of it?
I was 5. Look at this thing.
I'm sorry, was I asleep when you turned into a big wussy?
I think it's adorable.
I'm talking News of the World. Look how horrifying.
See this little robot.
Oops. Look how horrifying that is.
Wow. Is it looks like my sister.
It looks like my sister. And then on the inside, look. Oh, my God. Okay, so I'm sure everybody knows the cover. It was featured on a Family Guy episode where Stewie was like a young Ryan McKay, frightened of that.
Really? No kidding.
And track 3 is called All Dead, All Dead. I'm like, what is happening with this record? So I had to do some research about what the hell is going on with this. I will tell you that this is one of the most iconic and cool covers of all time.
Oh, absolutely. At a glance, you know exactly
as a kid, I mean, nearly in tears. Like, what? Get that out of the house.
But the face of that robot is just so...
all right, Sally. That's enough.
Yeah, good Liz.
Don't encourage her over there.
Oh, poor Roger Taylor, plummeting to his death.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Okay, so here's what happens with this cover. It's inspired by the there's an October 1953 edition of Astounding Science Fiction magazine. And that inspired, I think it was Roger Taylor who saw that and was like, ooh, we should render that more Queen-like. And make it our new album cover for News of the World. And so look at the cover, AD.
It is. It's a great
now,
cover.
Now, I want you to – the original caption, which if you see the original version, you can see it online. You can actually see it if you go to the News of the World Wikipedia page. Look at the robot. All you see basically is the – if you just look at the cover properly, it just had one dude in the monster's – or the robot's hand on the original. And the caption read, "Please fix it, Daddy."
What?
Yeah. Yeah, like the I keep calling it a monster because you could see how it scared the shit out of me. I'm like, and the monster this and the monster that. It's a robot. But so the robot is confused. Look how loving.
Well, that's why it never scared me. It's like, oh, it's like a puppy robot.
It's like a baby. It's like puppy it's bot. A child. It's a puppy bot. So it's not understanding that it's killing the humans.
Right. Yeah.
Is the whole
Because
thing.
Because there's blood on his finger and there's blood on Freddie Cartoon Mercury's chest. He was probably just going, gucci, gucci, gucci. Yeah.
Rubbing well, he was because you see the blood drop on his
That's what I'm saying,
index
on his
finger
right there. Yeah, right,
or middle finger, rather.
Like rubbing his belly like you would a puppy.
So Roger Taylor was really taken by this image and showed it to the band. And they're like, yeah, right. Well, let's see if we could track down the original artist. And they did. Frank Kelly Freeze. Who painted the original thing in 1953.
Oh, what?
And they're like, okay, we're a rock band, and we love this. Can you put us in this picture and maybe add something else to it? Like perhaps the robot reaching into an amphitheater and terrifying people?
Which is on the inside gatefold,
yes. So, and Freeze agreed to do it.
Nice.
And he said that he was a classical music fan and did not know Queen from nowhere, and he only listened to the band after doing the cover because he, quote, I thought I might just hate them and it would ruin all my ideas. And then he said he eventually liked the album. So he waited to finish his work before even hearing a Queen song.
I bet the money didn't suck either.
Yeah, I mean, if
they
he got
doing
some
okay
points,
by then, right?
If he got some points or royalties off of it. Oh, well, yeah. I think he had quite a career after it. You know, he ended up doing all kinds of science fiction type of stuff and was painting stuff for NASA or something like that. So if you read his you know,
billions
bio.
Billions of stars.
Passed away in like 2005 or something. But yeah, that's an iconic
wow,
cover.
Man.
And so the other thing that happened over the weekend, what spurred on me taking that record out to listen to was that my cousin Ted, you know Ted, he went to go see Queen this past weekend.
Oh, with Adam Lambert.
Yes. He said it was awesome.
I've heard that.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things, actually, from other cities and people in town, you know. And I just texted him. He was getting ready to walk in. And I said, let me know if they play Spread Your Wings, because that's one of my favorite Queen songs, you know. And he's like, all right. They didn't play it, but it was like kind of made me go, oh, yeah, I freaking love that song. And one of the things about Queen that I think most people always associate it with Freddie Mercury. Freddie Mercury, Freddie Mercury. Brian May, Freddie Mercury, Freddie Mercury. I mean, you always think about those two.
You don't think about Deacon and Taylor, right?
You don't. Yeah. And what if you look at the writing credit on this album, Freddie Mercury writes three songs, and one of them is Get Down, Make Love. So Freddie Mercury writes two songs.
Yeah, I was going to say that one doesn't even count.
It's not even a song.
It's not even a song.
Brian May writes like three songs. Roger Taylor writes a couple. And John Deacon writes a couple. So, and that's throughout their history. It's not
something.
Well, I was going
to say that's on every record. That's not new.
Yeah, that's something that I discovered within recent years is that Queen actually, there's four writers in that band and they all have top 10 hits.
And Roger Taylor sings at least one, sometimes two or more songs lead vocal as well from behind the kit too. So,
yeah. I mean, so with that being said, this song, Spread Your Wings, great tune, written by John Deacon.
I did not know he wrote that one.
He wrote it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to I got online and people were like talking about the recent Queen concert here in town and saying Adam Lambert, this and that. And some guy put a comment and just I was, you know, reading and, you know, chiming in and I didn't see it. But, you know, and I was going, yeah, by all accounts, he was great. And some guy goes, you know who would have been great? And I'm like, who? He goes, Eric Nally from Foxy Shazam would have been a better.
Really?
Well, think about how flamboyant he is.
Well, I've never seen him. I've heard him on records.
You haven't seen the videos?
No.
Oh, Google Foxy Shazam.
Really?
Like, oh, yeah, man. Like Church of Rock and Roll.
Yeah, or, I'm familiar with the music, but I don't know.
Or I Like It. Google that shit. Watch. He's got all the moves. I mean, I never would have thought of that. But Eric Nally from Foxy Shazam, Front and Queen, holy shit.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, man.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and drop the needle on this. It's side one, of course, AD. You know this record.
I do.
And it's
I'm not scared of it, though.
I'm still a little terrified. It really is the... Oh, stop it. Put it down. From EMI Records 1977, News of the World, of course. Queen, of course. And a great song, Spread Your Wings.
He spends his evenings alone in his hotel room, keeping his thoughts to himself. He'd be leaving soon, wishing he was miles and miles away. Nothing in this world, nothing would make him stay.
I always thought that was a hidden gem on this record.
It is. It actually is. It's
love that
beautiful song.
Song.
Great, great.
First
song.
First Queen single. This was actually a third single released on the album. And it's their first single released that did not feature any vocal harmonies.
Which is odd for
yes,
Queen.
Yes, it is odd.
And I've always thought
for their harmony.
That this song could use a vocal harmony when he does the Spread Your Little Wings and Fly. Like, I've always heard a higher harmony in there.
Like, little.
Yeah.
Some guy just going in there.
I think Bear should have done them.
Yeah, that low four octaves underneath the root, yeah. Spread your little wings. That would have been good. You're right.
Yeah. All right, AD, what you got, man?
All right, man. Well, you kind of made me change my order here. You changed my odor because of the tempo you picked. So I brought a record. It's going to be first up. It was going to be last up. This was going to be the one to go out on. But this is the one we're coming in strong. Coming in hot, Ryan.
All right.
I've got a record. I say, in my opinion, from the greatest of all the punk bands. Period. I brought Ramones.
Yep,
of course.
Absolutely. Oh. I brought Ramones' Leave Home, Ryan.
Oh, wow.
Their second record.
That record has not been on the show.
It has not. As a matter of fact, the Ramones had not been on the show. Shame on us.
Since I brought them,
by the way.
I bet.
What was it? Episode 60. I wrote it down here somewhere in my notes, but you know I can't read my writing.
I brought the End of the Century album.
Yeah, it was episode 61. Titled Stubby Rubber Fingers, which I like.
A classic.
Yeah, say that twice. So shame on us, but yeah. Shame no more. So it's their second record. And it's you know, sort of when Bloister Cult had their black and white period for their first three albums, and they did the live, and it was sort of marked that era.
It marked their era.
In their career, this is the second of the three that the Ramones did. They did, you know, the obviously the self-titled first one. This is their second, and they did Rocket to Russia, which was their third. After that, they still kind of kept – well, it was the same guys, except for that was Tommy Ramone's last album was Rocket to Russia. So that was this sort of
– right.
That sound. Marky Ramone came in. Mark Bell came in after that and you know, kind of really – really was able to capture the feel of Tommy Ramone, but there was something about Tommy Ramone, and when we talk about the Ramones, they're what they did for music, most people will laugh because it's like the fucking stupid ass Ramones. But what they really did, I mean, if you think about just the drummer alone, just the style that Buzzsaw, you know, feverish right hand, the right hand was pushing every instrument, the bass, the drums, and the guitar. It was all right-hand oriented. It was just it was just Tommy gun, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, most of the beats that Ramones do, are floor tom oriented, right? Floor tom, you know, instead of kick, snare, and hi-hat, or kick, snare, and ride, it's kick, snare, and floor tom, where the right hand is keeping time on the floor tom. And if you really, really think about it, and I really spent a lot of time on
this today.
You
were analyzing this today.
I did. I spent a lot. I got so high. And I thought about it. But, dude, so think about this. Prior to the Ramones, the floor tom groove, if you will, was relegated to big heavy tribal or you're right, big tribal grooves, impending doom grooves, you know, and things like that. The floor tom was rarely used. I dare you to name an instance before the Ramones.
I hear it is a little, I mean, now we're talking maybe just 2 or 3 years earlier, but like the glitter rock.
But
it swung though.
Yeah, it's not, and it was mid tempo. It wasn't, you know, 200 beats a minute,
right?
4/4 squared. It was the first of its kind in a way. So you think about that, you know, not only that the innovation, but again, I'm going to hand you this album cover, Ryan. And if you look at that album cover, this is 1977, came out January 10th, 1977. That album cover right there. You look at those guys on there, those kids. There are kids in high schools across America right now to this day that dress exactly like that still.
Sure.
Right? They
iconic.
And that will always fascinate me. It's just that they were so influential in so many ways, but I never really kind of got the floor tom thing. That just kind of like, wow, it's weird, you know?
It's an interesting point you make.
Yeah. So anyway, and if you're looking at the back cover, you're also noticing the logo.
Yeah, how about that?
The iconic logo based on the presidential seal, of course, made by Arturo Vega, their buddy and the guy who, you know, provided them with pretty much a jam space and a lot of other stuff. But that was the first appearance of that iconic logo.
Okay.
It was not on their first album, based again on the presidential seal. But if you notice, it's really kind of cool. There's the eagle, of course, inside a circle of 50 stars. And in one talon, the eagle clutches a baseball bat. Well,
yes.
That's obviously a reference to the lyrics to Beat on the Brat from their first album, Beat on the Brat with a Baseball Bat. And it also comes from Johnny Ramone's love of baseball. So that
He does, yeah.
But if you look in the left, or the eagle's right to your left talon, it's the old school olive branch, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ah. Au contraire. It is actually Arturo Vega decided that instead of an olive branch, he would use an apple tree branch because, quote, the Ramones are as American as apple pie. So that's an actual, if you look close, there's an apple in that branch.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of cool. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So what am I going to play? And there's so many. Now, this album is the second issue. The first album of Leave Home actually had the song Carbona, Not Glue. Mm-hmm. Now, do you remember Carbona? It was a household cleaner back in the 50s and 60s, and kids would huff it to get high. So
was that taken off the record then?
Well, okay, yes. It was taken off the record, but not because of the kids are going to huff it. They were worried more about copyright infringement. So they didn't give a shit about it. They're like, yeah, because they were busy actually snorting Carbona.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, Didi Ramone was actually addicted to Carbona huffing for a while.
Why does Tony Bongiovi keep showing up week after week on this damn podcast?
I can't stop bringing Tony Bongiovi songs in. Yeah, so,
produced by Tony Bongiovi.
Of course it was. You're the king of New Jersey's uncle. So also, Ryan, one of the recent trends we've been having, and I don't know if it's intentional or whether we're trying to outdo each other, but I think it started with Boom Boom, Out Go the Lights.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
Okay, right?
That was whatever trend that set,
now,
we should stop it.
I've been wanting to play a song from this record in particular, just because it's, again, part of the big three, and those first three albums by them are my favorite by far. But, you know, this was the one that... has Sheena Is a Punk Rocker on it rather than Carbona Not Glue. That when they took Carbona Not Glue off of all the releases, the UK version put us, you know, a different song in. I think Babysitter, I think they put in.
Oh.
And then the US version of the album, of the new version of it, had Sheena Is a Punk Rocker. And there's so many great songs on here, but in the spirit of Pat Travers, Boom Boom, Out Go the Lights.
Don't.
And I believe we followed up with a band called...
Don't conjure up that spirit.
I believe we followed up with a band called Battered Wives.
Oh, God.
I want to take this a step further.
Shocking.
Now, I'm going to read you some lyrics from this. Can you hand me the record, Ryan? Or just the inner sleeve, if you will.
Yes.
I'm going to read some lyrics.
I think I've already picked out what song you're going to play based on your...
song called Glad to See You Go.
Oh, I thought you meant you're going to kill that girl.
Oh, no, this one's 10 times worse. Read the lyrics for you. Gonna take a chance on her, one bullet in the cylinder, and in a moment of passion, get the glory like Charles Manson. Gonna smile, I'm gonna laugh, you're gonna get a bloodbath. And in a moment of passion, get the glory like Charles Manson. You gotta go, 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 goodbye. You gotta go, 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 goodbye. Now I know the score. I don't need you anymore. Don't want you because you're a bore. He kills her. Anyway. It's a lot of gunshots.
That's just right out shabby.
One would have been hysterical. An entire clip is a fucking...
Wow, he's going to have a heart attack. He's laughing so hard. AD, that wasn't the sound effect.
How ironic, though, that they ended up working with Phil Spector, you know, Mr.
Right.
Murdery guy.
Shit.
Yeah, so anyway. And I believe he killed a supermodel because he was just bored with her or something at one point in time. Yeah. So anyway, there's that, but there's always a great Ramones story. And Ryan, you read Monty Melnick's book, On the Road with the Ramones. I read the book too as well.
A must read.
But I found a great quote. Two things. I found a great quote from Howie Pyro, the original bass player from D-Generation, who grew up in the same neighborhood as the Ramones. And by all accounts, all they did was bicker and fight. He was basically, Monty Melnick, quote unquote, he said, I drove the bus for Special Ed, basically. the entire Ramones career. But they would bicker back and forth like school kids. And Howie Pyro remembers them when they first got their van and started going on tour. They would drive around the neighborhood in their van and like insult kids like, hey, you fat, as they're driving by, like high school kids, like, hey, you fat, hey, look at you, hey, you know, hey, dude wearing shorts, you're wearing shorts, you know, and it was like that stupid. So I run into a guy last time I'm in Mexico, true story, we were talking about that, and he's from New York, and he goes, do you ever hear of a guy, he says to me, you ever heard of a guy named Monty Melnick? I'm like, well, yeah, and he goes, one time I got to ride in that van with those guys. And he goes, and inside the van, you know, Johnny rode shotgun, Joey sat in the back, and Tommy and Dee Dee sat in the, you know, in the middle. Mm-hmm. And he goes, so I was in one of the seats, and it was just like, it was seriously like, yeah, you're stupid. No, you're stupid. No, you're fucking stupid. Yeah, well, you're stupider. Yeah, well, fuck you. No, fuck you. Yeah, he goes, hey, shut up. No, you shut up. And it was like literally, he goes, it went on for an hour. You're stupid. You're stupid. Look how stupid you are. Not only are you stupid, you look stupid.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you look stupider.
It's like an insane asylum.
Let's go ahead and play Glad to See You Go, a love song by the Ramones.
Gonna take one chance on her, one foot in the cylinder, and in a moment of passion, get the glory, light of fancy. Gonna smile, I'm gonna laugh, you're gonna get a blood bath. And in a moment of passion, get the glory, light of fancy. Gotta go, 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 goodbye. Let's see you 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 go, 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 goodbye. Now I know the score. I don't need you anymore. Don't want you cross your I need somebody good. Should I take a chance on her? One foot in the cylinder. Gonna smile, I'm gonna laugh. You're gonna want my autograph. And in a moment of passion, get the light to that. You gotta go, 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 goodbye. Let's see you go, 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 goodbye. Let's see you go, 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 goodbye. Let's see you go, 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 goodbye.
Right?
Yeah.
Fucking Ramones. Glad to See You Go from the Leave Home album, 77, Sire Records. That album, dude, they just never got the success. Peaked at 148.
Really?
I mean, dude, right?
Wow.
Classic. So Sheena's a Punk Rocker is an iconic tune on this
record. What
the
sales figures are now.
I don't know, man. But all in all, you know what, dude? A career of 2,263 shows in 22 years. There was never a harder working band, wow. Man. They got in their van. They never had the limos and the tour buses. They got in a 15-passenger van and toured everywhere in that. And you know what? They're the last of the great. I think they're the greatest of the great punk bands. They set the template. They mm-hmm. are the stencil. And they're actually a living, breathing Spinal Tap, sort of in a parallel universe because
yeah.
everybody died before the drummer, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah, Tommy Ramone was the last to go. So there you go. Ramones, man. I love the Ramones. Who doesn't love the Ramones?
Everybody loves the Ramones.
What you got in your box, Rye?
Well, another record that terrified me.
I'm scared of for you
yes.
right now.
You know this story, AD. As a matter of fact, I think I've told it on this podcast and on another podcast even. I was in Little Rock, Arkansas. I must have been 12. And my whole family was visiting aunts and uncles, and they had kids, our cousins, that were the same age. And so we were sleeping out in the living room with the TV on. Now, they had just gotten MTV, which was cool. So it was me and my two brothers sleeping on a fold-out bed in the living room with the blue glow of the TV. And kind of dozed off, but in the middle of the night, I woke up, MTV is still playing, and I saw what I would learn was
Madonna's torpedo tits.
No.
Those fuckers are terrifying.
That's terrifying. That's 3D.
What are those?
No, I saw some giant skeleton dude lurching about the stage. I saw devils
Iron
with
Maiden.
Pitchforks.
You want the Maiden.
And I was like, and it was completely dark in the room except for this. And I'm going, what the fuck is that?
Eddie.
And that was Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast video.
Well, wow. Eddie just showed up.
As soon as I touched that record, I heard Your Soul Is Mine.
Right? Yeah.
Did anybody else hear that? Liz,
I didn't hear anything.
So we did a podcast with BJ over at Rock and or Roll. We talked about this album at length. I think I told that story on that show as well. And we dug up some pretty fun facts. If you guys want to go over to Rock and or Roll podcast and check that out, it's a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun breaking it down. So some crazy stuff. Speaking of things that spook you out about this record, remember, AD, during the recording of this album, the producer, the legendary Martin Birch.
Martin Birch.
We know from Deep Purple.
Right.
He crashed his car into a bus that was carrying nuns.
That's so fantastic. That's such a great story.
He gets the repair bill back to for his car. The repair bill is 666 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. I guess there's stories of lights going off and on intermittently in the studio. Recording gear was breaking down. The second engineer's name on the record is credited as Nigel. It was working yesterday. Hewitt Green.
His name is Lucifer Satan.
Yes.
Yeah. Ian Lucifer Satan.
So some crazy stuff going on. This is 1982 on EMI, of course. I think we all know this record. I'm going to play 22 Acacia Avenue because it's one of, I wouldn't say necessarily a hidden gem on a record such as this, but I'm not going to play one of the big three, the big three being the title track, Run to the Hills, or Hallowed Be Thy Name, which are great. But I think the fourth best song on the record is 22 Acacia Avenue. And because the other three I'm so burned out on, 22 Acacia Avenue now is the best song on the record.
Well, the iconic ones everybody's going to know. If anybody who doesn't really know Iron Maiden that much, it's going to get them deeper in. Anybody who is an Iron Maiden freak's going to go, thank God you're not playing those other three. So you're doing good. That's a good notion.
So I believe on the podcast you said this song is about a whore and her house of whores.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So, cracked me up.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is about a whore. It's the continuing saga of Charlotte the Harlot, the last time Iron Maiden was on the show. I played Charlotte the Harlot.
That's right, you did.
So
that's
I'm
right.
doing a sequel here. Just like you did last week.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, very good. Well played, my friend.
Written by Steve Harris, of course, and Adrian Smith jumps in on the writing, too. And we laughed a lot about the lyrics being kind of cheesy, and you mentioned that Gene Simmons would blush at some of, molesta. She can take
a bit
all this.
Sophomoric, but charmingly so somehow.
Odd to see such sophomoric lyrics in an Iron Maiden song when you think about it, but yeah. It doesn't detract from how awesome it is. This, of course, is the first album with Bruce Dickinson, and seems like a fairly transitional album, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We still got Clive Burr on the drums, and he's killing it.
He was a great drummer. I had no problem with him playing.
Yeah. He would be out after this album due to alcohol and just burnout. Just like Paul Di'Anno, the singer, was out after Killers. Yeah. Same kind of deal with those two. Unfortunate, because I always loved Clive Burr's drumming, and he is on fire on this track.
But you know who they got now, though?
Nico.
Yeah, come on, right?
The fabulous Nico. Yeah. He's great. So, let's just get on with it, man. It's a fairly long song, so let's check it out. Scared the shit out of me in Little Rock, Arkansas. Terrified. And look at that cover.
Right? Now, that's scary.
Yeah.
I'm a little scared of that.
Yeah, that's one that I burned. I think I had a friend named Eric at school that had this record, and I burned. It wasn't called burning back then. I duped it onto a cassette. And I did not label Number of the Beast for fear my mom would find it and go, I'm throwing that out.
You can't hear that. Yeah, that's going out of the house.
I think it just said,
"The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!"
Perfect. I would just write, I think I put Iron M, that's it. And I knew what it was.
Yeah,
I didn't put 666 or anything like that on there.
664, the neighbor of the beast, right?
So it's the end of side one. This is the side one side with Eddie's face.
Eddie's face.
Yeah.
665, the guy who lives across the street from the beast.
The neighbor of the beast.
Yeah.
Feeling down, depressed and lonely, I know a place where we can go. 22 Acacia Avenue. Meet a lady that I know. So if you're looking for a good time,
yeah, baby. Come on. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Fucking Iron Maiden. Ryan, good one.
Yes, love that record. Love that record. Love that band. That's so nostalgic to me because I've been listening to it since that fateful night in Little Rock.
Are you still afraid of it?
No.
Okay, good. Good.
That robot over there is looking at me, though.
Monster.
Stop it.
Robot's always going to bother you, isn't it?
It's the eyes. Because you can't help it. You can't talk it out of killing you.
Dude, there were back in the day, there was this movie called Trilogy of Terror.
Oh, my God.
And it was Karen Black,
movie.
Right? With this freaking doll. And if the necklace falls off it, it's this like little doll. What's it, about a foot high?
Yes.
One of the most terrifying movies of all time.
Yes.
Well, let's put her on an album cover so you can get made fun of tonight.
I hate that movie.
That was the scariest.
The necklace came off something.
Yeah, and then it just like it came to life, this doll, and it attacked. It had this little knife.
Oh, Jesus.
It was terrible. Yeah. Oh, my God.
It was terrifying.
And it's a TV movie.
Yeah, TV movie.
Wow, it freaked you out.
Right?
And they remade it, too. They remade it like
Trilogy of Terror
10 years ago.
I don't even want to watch it.
The original
I'll take the original
one,
all day long.
Oh my God. And I try to find every Halloween, I try to find that doll.
Oh, really?
Yes, I do.
Did they ever make like.
Yes, they made the doll. It's expensive as hell, and I try to find every Halloween.
Does it have a little removable necklace on it?
I'm not taking it off.
Listen, that fucker ain't coming to my house. I'll tell you that right now. Fuck that shit. That's terrifying.
All right, AD, what you got, brother?
I got some awesome shit. I first heard this song. This song and this, I shake my box at you. I first heard this song on my way to a drum lesson when I was barely 10 years old.
Ah.
And I knew that it was a cover because I had what I thought was the original on a Beatle record. Beatles actually had done a cover of it. But I owned the 45 of this and somehow it's gone, long gone. But
yeah.
When I first heard this song, this version had such a cool, soulful feel. It had a bite, it had an edge, and it was even at 10 years old, I go, well, this is kind of a psychedelic, this is not just kind of a soulful bluesy number, it's got a psychedelic edge to it. But the clincher to me was the vocal track. The vocal track, the song was written by Burt Bacharach, first of all, and some other dudes, Luther Dixon and Mac David. It was originally released by the Shirelles, and if you've heard their version of this, it's astounding. It's the actual original version. The Beatles redid it in, 62, I think.
Real early then?
Yeah.
Wow, back in the old...
back in the VJ, before they were...
Yeah, I was thinking Cavern Club, way back when.
Yeah, well, they first got signed to VJ Records, and I think it was on there introducing the Beatles records from that. But this turned into a huge hit in 1969 for a band called Smith. Now, Ryan, I normally don't play hit songs on this. Oh, be careful with this because, look, it's got this, right? But, oh, look, it's over here. Ah, there's a big hole in this.
Oh,
the spine of this is completely eaten out. I usually don't play hit songs. I don't play the number one number, the sort of go-to number on any album. But this song compels me. This is such I think, the definitive version of this song called Baby, It's You. You've heard that.
I know I have, but can you sing it? How's it go?
It's not the way you can to touch my heart. Sha-la-la-la-la. It's not the way you kiss that tears me apart. Sha-la-la-la. It doesn't matter what they say, right? I'm gonna love you any old way. What can I do? But it's true, right? And then it's like, here's the hook. Don't want nobody, nobody. Baby, it's you. You've heard it, right?
Yeah.
A lot of chords. Nice work, nice work. We got us a fucking band here, motherfucker.
We are a classy bunch.
We are a classy bunch.
Well, that was a great song, AD. What I brought.
I think we just made the definitive version of that. But have you not heard this band called Smith?
No.
Okay, well, the album is called A Group Called Smith.
Okay.
It's their debut. They put out two. Chicky over. Okay. All right.
Chicky over.
Listen. Here's the deal. Came out.
Well, I'm glad you didn't finish that sentence.
No, we're going to get into this, though. We really are.
Chicky over here.
ABC Dunhill Records, July 69, produced by Steve Barry and Joel Sill. I got that out. Now, Ryan, I'm going to hand you this album cover, so be careful here, okay?
Yeah.
You talk about a nearly disastrous album cover, okay, Ryan?
Okay.
Now, no, don't turn it over. No. Look at the front. Don't turn the back over yet.
Jeez.
Okay, so
many rules.
We're gonna walk through this, okay? Take a look at this.
All right.
Artful Dodger syndrome, Ryan?
In the dudes, yes.
Okay, so here we go.
And that of course is a dorky looking band.
You've got the band standing outside, first of all, in a sort of a dirt area in the middle of a large field. You with me so far?
Yeah.
On the edge of a wooded area, correct?
Yep. We're outside.
Okay.
Yep.
In the middle of that dirt area is a fucking outhouse. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. That's an outhouse.
Actually, a double wide outhouse, if you will.
A fairly big outhouse.
I know outhouses. I'm from Detroit. All right. So the band is around, leaning on or in the outhouse, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go through these band members. You got one guy, a barefoot fake hippie type, sitting in the dirt outside the doorway of the outhouse, right?
Yeah.
That guy in the front, or sort of on the floor, right? Barefoot fake hippie. Mm. Then you got a guy to his left, leaning on the outhouse in pretty much full-on cowboy gear, right?
Yeah. He's okay. Got like the Keith Carradine fringy Indian jacket.
Yeah, right. And all right. So behind the fake hippie dude guy, actually sitting in the outhouse on the shitter, is some pissed off mustache guy. Right.
Right. Yeah. He's on the turlet.
Am I wrong so far? Are we getting this right?
You're nailing it.
Okay. Now on the far left of the outhouse, to everyone else's right, is a guy leaning on the outhouse who is. I don't even know. What's this guy? He's the guy who sells washer dryers at fucking Sears or something,
is,
right?
And he's regretting wearing the white pants to this photo shoot.
You got it. Okay, so now front and center is this super hot, chick.
Very pretty 1960s.
Blonde chick, yeah. Dressed like a high school boy or what the fuck ever. Dude, put on your whore clothes. You're making an album.
How dare
you? Come on, you're making a record. You're making, right? You dress like that on a record, you hot?
I like that on her.
Oh, please, stop. I want to see her dressed like Susie fucking Quattro.
You're so sexist.
No, I'm not. So, dude, so anyway.
I don't know. What's wrong with what she's wearing, Liz?
Beautiful.
Oh, come on. Hand it to Liz. Liz, fashion consultant. Gee, you're a chick. Would you wear that on your fucking album cover? You wouldn't wear it.
No?
She's dressed like a high school boy in the 70s.
Fair?
She is, yeah.
Come on.
What do you think?
She's dressed like Leif Garrett or something.
I'm telling you, right?
I mean, she's not showing.
Girl?
See?
Wow.
I mean, it's not even
like that. It's a girl.
Okay, yeah. Oh, right. I thought you were talking about this one.
That's the fake hippie guy.
Oh, okay.
You can tell by the bare feet.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
She's fucking hot. I'd like to see her make out with Susie Quattro and Jeannie C. Riley.
Well, you can't see her figure.
Right. Don't you want to sell that? So my whole thing is that they could have sold. It looks like a fucking country band.
It does look like a country band.
Yeah. A bad country band. Now, Ryan, I'm going to hand this back to you.
Or a folk band.
Flip it over, and you tell me about the incredible photography on the back.
Well, who? Well, you can't see it. It's all dark at the top. Like the shadings. Like now, this picture was taken, and the sun has disappeared. And nearly everybody's gone.
So you
can't see any of the
faces. Can't see anybody in the band.
What the hell is that?
What the hell?
And then, you know, they give the photographer a credit on the back. I'm like, take my name off that shit.
No,
man.
Shit.
Right?
Wow.
But, okay, let's talk about the record. It's a great record. It's just,
really?
It's a great psychedelic.
How can it be?
Kind of.
And how is it psychedelic when these people look like they're Oak Ridge Boys?
Totally, that's fucking Artful Dodger syndrome. Am I wrong?
Wow, maybe the worst case ever.
It could be worse than Artful Dodger themselves. Right?
Yeah.
Sitting on a toilet.
It's, you know, it might have to be called Smith Syndrome from now on. They might have taken the crown from Artful Dodger.
Maybe.
For worst use of album cover. Front and back, though.
Yeah, front.
Holy shit.
Really unfortunate.
So anyway, the singer, Gail McCormick, she's totally badass. I mean, she's got that raspy
raspy
Maggie Bell, Janis Joplin grit. But when she's like sort of, you know, when she's totally belting it out, but when she's like got that rich soulful thing in the lower registers, dude, it's totally like Inga Rumpf, sexy, sultry, okay. kind of growly, purr, you know? But yeah, my advice with if I was their manager is just like, man, dress her up like super hot. You know, take
get off the toilet.
Dude, she's fucking gorgeous. Yeah.
And get that guy off the toilet.
Take the angry mustache guy off the toilet, man. He's pooping. We're doing a shoot here. Come on.
He's not even in the band.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. It smells like a toilet in here.
So anyway, this chick, she's got a great voice. She's one of my favorite singers. This is a tremendous album. She shares lead vocals with a couple of the other guys in the band, but she sings primarily as the lead singer, I'd say about maybe 70% of the songs. But she began her career doing like Etta James covers and Tina Turner covers in clubs around St. Louis and sang in a suburban choir, sang soprano, which is kind of cool because she had that rasp. I'd love to hear that up in a soprano register.
Wow, yeah.
And she, you know, would work with the symphony, St. Louis Symphony, and, you know, all that. And prior to that, in 68, moved to L.A., met these guys. This is primarily a cover band, really. But they were playing a club, and aging rocker Del Shannon saw them at a club. He was probably drunk and wanted to bang her and went, hey, you know what I can do for you, fucking guy? You look good. I'll get you a fucking deal. ABC deal. Run Dunhill Records here if you just come to my. So anyway, whatever happened, they got a deal doing cover tunes for ABC Dunhill. So I'm betting she did.
Well,
all right. So they put out that this record in 69. And then in 1970, they put out their second one, another cover record called Minus Plus. And that was it. So sadly, Gail McCormick passed away on March 1st, 2016 at age 67 from lung cancer and bone cancer and pneumonia complications and stuff. But this album, you don't hear about Smith. Right?
No, I don't know anything about them.
The single peaked at number 5.
Wow.
And the album, believe it or not, peaked at number 17, which I had no idea. I thought it was
this
kind of
this album?
Yeah.
With this cover?
Yeah. So that's my point. You think about if they'd had a great cover, dude, they could have gone to number 1. A great album cover.
Maybe, yeah. I'm just surprised. I was going to go the other way. I was going to say, man, Artful Dodger needed a stronger single.
Well, this one's it. And again, I usually stay away from the hit, but this is such a compelling song for me. And as soon as I heard this, I was on my way to a drum lesson. And I got to the drum lesson. I said, have you ever heard of a band called Smith and a song called Baby, It's You? And my drum teacher goes, yeah, it's this new song that's out. I go, teach me that beat.
Tears me apart.
come on.
That's great.
It's a hit song, but I usually stay away from them. But that one's worth hearing, man.
Well, I actually have heard that version on the oldie station here in town.
Usually,
and I was like, who the hell is that singer?
Yeah, usually you'll hear the minute 58 version of
it. That's probably what it was.
Yeah, they get rid of the middle verse and cut that fade in half and get rid of a chorus or something. But
right.
Yeah, but that's "Baby It's You" by Smith from the album A Group Called Smith.
They were great.
ABC Dunhill Records, July 69, came out. Gail McCormick, man, if you just put on some Suzy Quatro jumpsuits, you'd have sold a few. You'd have sold a few, honey.
But her outfit leaves a lot to the imagination, and I just can imagine how nice that is underneath all of that.
I don't look at a chick dressed like a teenage boy and imagine anything, Ryan.
What are you talking about?
I can't go there.
Why do you keep saying she's a teenage boy? You can see her face and her hair.
Dude, I had those same pants and shirt
and
in
her
high
lack of an Adam's apple, just because you had that same outfit. All right.
Are you saying I dress like a girl?
Yes. So, all right. It's albums that terrified me night here. But now it's time to turn the tables, AD, and bring an album that terrifies you.
Oh.
Oh, no.
You did not. You fucking did it. You did not.
Ryan McKay.
You hateful bastard.
Damn.
Ryan, we're friends. Ryan.
I brought...
If you play Pile Driver, which is actually the best song on there.
No, I beg to differ. this is the wrestling album part two. Pile Driver is the name of the album.
Now that's from the J by Proxy.
This is from the J by Proxy box.
I couldn't pull the trigger on it last week, Ryan.
Oh, come on. I had to read. I'm like, I have to hear that first of all and then and do some research on it.
Come on, right?
I wrote in my notes, perhaps the most disposable record ever made.
<That's>, yeah. Look how coked up Hulk Hogan. Look at the coke face. Look at all the
he is
on.
Jacked and roided out of his gourd.
Cocaine!
Let me tell you something, brother.
Let me tell your brother.
My dogs. Right here, right now, bro.
I'm strung out on heroin.
So who's on the cover is Hulk Hogan, and who doesn't front his own song? Hulk Hogan.
Right? Yeah.
He's part of the Wrestling All-Stars or something. It's not even credited anywhere. So, yeah.
It's basically a Rick Derringer vehicle to
it is, yeah. So Rick Derringer produces, yeah.
Thank you, Jesus.
Rock and roll hoochie-coo. How they call it hoochie-coochie.
So here's what I found on this. I got Vince McMahon, you know, who took over the WWF from his father in 1982. And his rebranding of the wrestling stuff is a bit of a genius move on his part. He took it from VFW halls to large pay-per-view events in just a few short years, adding the glitz and celebrity of the MTV age. And this is part two, the wrestling album two. The first album, the wrestling album one, comes out during the apex of the WWF in 1985.
Nobody won, Ryan. Nobody won.
We could put this all down on, I mean, obviously Vince McMahon, but it really is the work of a Captain Lou Albano. Yeah.
Captain Lou Albano. I was going to play that song by NRBK. I should have played it.
Yeah.
I should have damn played it, Ryan.
So Captain Lou Albano meets Cyndi Lauper in Puerto Rico in 1983. They hit it off, and she asked him to be in her video, which, of course, is in
I mentioned
Girls Just Want to Have
episode.
Fun.
Yeah.
And in return, Cyndi would appear on a WWF with Lou Albano on some show, like a little talk show type of thing. And Lou Albano called her a broad, which
started a fight.
Which started a fight.
Which is fantastic.
And the feud was on, AD. And to settle it, there would be a match to end it all with Lauper and Albano each choosing a female wrestler who would compete for them. Okay. And so Cyndi Lauper chose Wendi Richter. And Albano chose one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, the Fabulous Moolah.
Oh, the Fabulous Moolah!
Yeah.
She was like in her
60s. I totally remember that.
She must have been wrestling in the 50s or something.
They milked that teat.
Oh my God.
Did they or not?
And all of this aired on MTV.
It sure did, absolutely.
Right? So Cyndi Lauper, in the fight, you're wondering who won, I'm sure. Cyndi Lauper ended up hitting the fabulous Moolah with a loaded purse of doom. And so Wendy Richter's Lauper's contestant won. And Rockin' Wrestling was a big hit on MTV. Vince McMahon and Lou Albano see dollar signs along with Cyndi Lauper's manager and along with his buddy Rick Derringer. And they're like, let's just make a record.
Yeah.
And that's where it all started. Yes. And
It hits,
I believe it was in the 80s in terms of album sales. Like it hit 83 or something on the Billboard charts.
How?
Because WWF was.
I know.
So let's turn. Oh, 80s lost. Not since Pac-Man Fever have you been so upset. So I'm going to play a song called Crank It Up by Jimmy Hart. The Mouth of the South, AD.
Oh, God.
Who actually has some musician credibility. He was a member of the Gentries in the 60s.
No, he was not.
He's a member of the Gentries.
Get out.
Scored a big hit with Keep On Dancing.
Of course, yeah.
Remember that one?
Well, here's the complaint I had. Because Jimmy Hart, hey, he was that manager guy. Yeah, hey, hey.
Oh, you're supposed to hate him.
But you kind of want him to sing that way.
Yeah.
Right? And he's actually singing pretty well. And that was the disappointment with this record.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It wasn't as...
It seems like the first album, that was a wrestling album, is a bit more parody.
Right.
You know, this one seems...
I want more caricature.
Yeah, this one's just straight up, let's make some good songs. And they're awful. Awful.
That's why.
So Jimmy Hart, he started managing with his high school friend is Jerry Lawler. And so he starts managing him. And of course, Jerry Lawler's famous for his feud.
With Andy Kaufman.
And such a great shtick. Andy was wrestling women and had declared himself the intergender heavyweight champion.
Of the world. Yeah, I remember that.
You are talking about the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
Indeed.
There we are.
And Jerry Lawler took exception to this and challenged Andy to a fight. And they feuded pretty intently on Letterman, if you recall, scaring the shit out of David Letterman. Yeah. And during the fight, Lawler pile-drived Kaufman twice, sending him into the hospital.
I'll sue.
Yeah, I'll sue. Didn't he have a neck brace
dragged
on?
Dragged out of the arena. Yeah. I'll sue. Yeah. I'll see you in court.
And just for the record, Lawler stated later on that whole thing was obviously cooked up by him and Andy, who actually great friends.
No way. Yeah. No, really?
Aww. Yeah, so.
Couldn't see that a mile away.
So Jimmy Hart, that's a different wrestling company.
Yes.
All that stuff. That was prior to Vince McMahon and WWF.
Derringer was also involved in that whole thing with Sam Kinison doing Wild Thing as
Did
well.
Did he? Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was a big Derringer thing. So
that was his 80s shtick, huh? Making sort of comic parody albums
because he was kind of hip with those kind of people that were doing that shtick thing.
Right.
It was sort of the subculture of rock and roll in a weird way wrestling was.
Right. So Jimmy Hart's good buddy, Hillbilly Jim, told him, look, I'm going to tell you something. Vince McMahon is having... WWF and WrestleMania, and they saw your tapes from all the Lawler stuff and all that, and they've been trying to reach you. But every time that Hart would get a call from the area code that they're in, a 203 area code, he'd think it was one of the wrestlers fucking with him. So he would never answer the phone, and Hillbilly Jim's like,
cocaine.
Come on, you should do it. Let me call the office and see if they still want you. And 25 minutes later, Vince McMahon called that number, and the rest is history, and then he joins in.
Jesus.
And now he's on this record.
Why this one? This was the one that stood out to me that I wanted his song to be the most annoying.
Oh, it is. It's called Crank It Up, and it's just it's a party anthem.
Keyword being crank.
Yes. Oh, yes. Indeed, oh. Sir. This is 80s schlock at its worst. Just great.
Let's snort Peru and make a record.
Yes, you could totally hear that happening here.
Yeah.
Lyrics are just awful. What are you going to do? Crank it up and throw it down or whatever. I don't know.
Pile Driver was the one I was going to play.
That vocal is terrible. From Coco Beware.
Yeah.
Yeah, read off the the artists that are a part of.
We have Robbie Dupree and Strike Force. We have Coco Beware, as you just mentioned. We have the Honky Tonk Man.
That is freaking awful.
We have Axe and Smash.
I don't remember them.
Yeah, they were a duo. We have Slick.
I don't remember. This is like all the B artists, yes, the B acts, right?
Well, so Slick was a manager. Now he was a manager. He was we have, of course, Jimmy Hart, the aforementioned. We have Hillbilly Jim, and Gertrude is with him.
That Hillbilly Jim, that's the ballad. Remember the ballad on here? Oh, my
horrible.
God.
Oh, jeez.
It is a train wreck.
And we have Stand Back by Vince McMahon, actually.
Which
does
is
a vocal. Lends a
also very,
vocal track.
Very bad. Actually, it's worth watching Stand Back if you YouTube that one, Vince McMahon Stand Back, because it's a Slammy Award show where he comes out and performs it back in the day. And it's all the wrestlers backing him up, and you got Macho Man Savage on a
saxophone.
Kind of
like a We Are the World kind of thing.
And all the wrestlers are just roided out, and they've got horns, and then Hulk Hogan's got this bright yellow BC Rich bass that he's rocking back there.
Not playing a note.
No.
Not plugged
God,
in.
No. No, God, no.
We have Gene Okerlund.
Oh, you were talking about that.
Doing a unison duet slash thing, if you will, with Rick Derringer singing Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo.
Just why?
It's not very pleasant. And that's pretty much it. Then the entire crew doing If You Only Knew, sort of again, collective We Are the World.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. Well, they're talking smack to each other.
Jay Aylett. You bastard,
you
don't
it.
Ever sell, send a record like this again.
Now he's going to send
I
a bunch.
I wouldn't even play it last week. I'm like, I couldn't get behind it because it is bad. It's a horrible, horrible
record. Utterly disposable.
But it's not funny, though. It's not bad funny. It's just bad.
Yeah, right. So you gave it to Ryan.
I mean,
so
dude, I could play, play Ambrosia if you're
going
to do that.
Oh, jeez.
Right?
Rolling Stone's review of the first wrestling album, they didn't review this, but they said, for the wrestlers, they said, well, as singers, they are pretty good wrestlers.
So, oh, boy.
Get thoughts of action, had my radio playing on my rock and roll station. Saw three hot ladies down by the square. I said, jump in, girls, let's go party somewhere.
Well, there's that. There you go.
There's that.
Does that terrify you?
Yeah.
Oh, That's so good.
I was afraid of it. I actually put it back in the box last week, and you brought it back.
That's how
you did.
That's a commitment.
Yeah.
To that J by Proxy's box there.
You know, I with no apologies to J by Proxy, none on my behalf, none, because you just heard it. You know.
Yeah, and so, when you pulled it out on the episode, I was like, "Aren't we going to listen to that? That looks awful." I love bad music sometimes.
Well, I can save your ass, Ryan.
Okay, what you got?
I can save your ass. And I don't want you to hold this. Don't open it. I'm actually going to hand Ryan McKay my mystery box. He's never touched my box before.
Oh, it's so slimy.
Oh, that's another Beyonce song. He's never touched my box before. My box before.
That's the ballad.
He never touched my box before. Box before. Yeah.
Anyway. He's never
touched my box before.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's good.
We got to send that to her, too.
The album's called The Box.
I think we've written the entire second new Beyonce record,
right,
haven't we?
It's called The Box. Concept.
So, Ryan, I bring you a treat.
Yeah?
That will leave you salivating.
All right.
And screaming, more, 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 mortal!
No!
Yeah!
No.
All
right! Why would you make me touch this?
Mortal!
I love it!
I'm just going to throw this on the floor. There.
That's what I thought. Wow. You asshole.
Oh, I got it in my hand.
Oh, look at it. Touch it. Taste it. Just touch it. Touch it with your tongue. Just put it on. Gross. Rub it on your belly. Rub it on your man titties.
It's
just
not a Susie Quattro record.
Oh, that's such a great record. I brought Stand Up by Jethro Tull, haven't I, Ryan?
Yeah, I guess so.
If you're not nice, I'll play Beret.
Now, where does this fall in the canon?
That's their second album. Now, this is their very first one was a record called This Was Jethro Tull. That was when Mick Abrams was in the band before Martin Barr joined the band. And that Mick Abrams had only done the one record. And, of course, Mick Abrams and Ian Anderson were sort of having a battle as to, you know, what direction they were going to take. Mick Abrams wanted to stay on the sort of the heavy electric blues rock
whatever
thing.
Mick Abrams should have listened to Mick Abrams.
Well, no. Now, Mick Abrams, as you know, went on to form Blodwyn Pig.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
we played a little
records.
Blodwyn Pig on this record. I mean, on this, we played a little Blodwyn Pig on this show. So, so this is their second record. Now, they're still a four-piece band. It's still sort of Tull Mark 1.5.
Okay.
They were, because ultimately Tull, in their real day, as sort of as we know it, has always been a five-piece. But this was in, they were still a four-piece in their first two records. So it was Glenn Cornick on bass and, of course, Clive Banka on the drums.
Yeah.
And when Martin Barr joined the band, that's really where the sort of the electric thing got a little heavier, a little more prog. But also Ian Anderson wanted to do more Celtic folk. Yeah. And incorporate classical bent into it, too. So
this all sounds great on paper.
You're just nodding your head like, yeah.
I'm going,
yeah.
I like everything you say, yeah, that you're saying.
And
but
your eyes say, do you have an album by Slade you could play? Yeah. Yeah, that's a, yeah, I know. I'm reading that.
Yeah.
But no, I think you're going to like this, Ryan. Now, before we go any further, you know, I want to talk to you about the critics. The critics really liked their new change, right? The fans, absolutely all the fans, including myself, and I'm a huge Tull fan, and all the listeners know that, and of course you do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor, poor, pitiful me.
Yeah.
But it's a favorite. It's one of their favorites because they were real formative. They really gave away their first hint of sort of the new...
The new incarnation.
Yeah, because, I mean, dude, how many fucking old British electric blues bands are there? Who wants to hear that shit anymore?
Oh, what's the year of this?
This was 69, 1969.
Okay, good. Well, I like they're bucking the trend because you're right. There were too many heavy blues bands.
Right.
It needed a twist,
yeah.
Like Black Sabbath
so,
made a twist out of it, right?
Now, Robert Christgau had an opinion on this.
Oh.
He called it adequate and gave it a C minus, adding a quote, "I find his success very depressing."
Wow. Are you sure I didn't write that?
Yeah, you and who would have figured you and Christgau have anything in common ever?
We rarely do,
right?
Outside
yeah.
of Graham Parker.
I found that amazing. So, but now another thing about Jethro Tull is that a lot of people don't know, and I did not know this until I went further into some research, is that they were sort of one of the catalysts. Those guys, and 10 years after, believe it or not, were a catalyst to the birth of Chrysalis Records.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so what happened was there was this this guy named Chris Wright and Terry Ellis. And Terry Ellis was a was a producer, and Chris Wright was working with another record label. I believe one was with Island, and the other one was with Reprise, I want to say. And so Chris Wright, Terry Ellis, Chrysalis, right?
That's where they got the name. There you
and
go.
And a chrysalis, by definition, is the larva form of a
butterfly.
So kind of made sense. So, you know, new birth and all that stuff. But see, Chrysalis started out just as a publisher. So they published 10 years after. They ended up getting them a deal, I think, with Island. I may be wrong, or it was either Island or Reprise. They formed, and then they got Tull a publishing deal and put out a single. But nobody was backing it, and they were pissed. These guys were pissed off, like, this band's got to be huge. So that's what really formed the catalyst of them doing management and then starting working as a label, forming a label. But they didn't have the money for distribution. So that's when they hooked up with Reprise in the U.S. and Island in the U.K. and used them for distribution until 1976 when they could finally – became a label proper. But I didn't know, I had no idea about the history of that. So that's kind of how
a long time in their history. I would have thought Chrysalis was, by 1976, was a long old label.
Yeah. It's a label that,
like,
you know,
officially.
Yeah, that you know very, very well. But they were putting out a lot of, and backing Procol Harum was another one of their artists that they were kind of behind and going, hey, how come this and that, you know, that. So they were kind of –
Trower.
Yeah, but the thing is, they were smart. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Trower's on Chrysalis as well.
Yeah.
But they were smart because they were a publisher first. So what's that say?
Money.
Cha-ching.
Yeah.
Money. Yeah. And then they got someone else to distribute, right? And the distribution means actually paying to have the record shipped.
Oh.
These guys were fucking brilliant. You go behind that.
They had a lot of acts. UFO was on Chrysalis.
Absolutely, they
were. There's a lot of cool
acts.
But
other people were literally physically and financially moving the units that they were publishing and managing.
Okay, well, it's a good business model there.
Brilliant. I'm snapping my fingers at you.
Brilliant, Mr. Yeah. Ellis.
Brilliant. That's Chris Wright and Terry Ellis. As a matter of fact, Terry Ellis produces this brilliant album with Ian Anderson. Ryan, I'm going to play a song called Nothing Is Easy. Why? Because nothing is easy, Ryan. This is actually about, you know, record company shenanigans and bullshit. He talks about when we first summarized the lyrics. When we first started, we couldn't get arrested. Then when we got good, everybody wanted our money. Now everybody still wants a piece of us. But you know what? Nothing is easy. You got to earn it. We did. Check it out. And they're saying, don't get upset when things bother you. Because, of course, the Ian Anderson sort of on top looking down going, here's how you do this, you know. You just relax and don't count your money, you know, and all this. And it's kind of cool, though. But ultimately, and the last line of the last verse, ultimately says, put on our records. That'll make you happy.
Wow.
You'll be fine. And it's kind of cool. What you're going to hear is the way Glenn Cornick on the bass, Martin Barr on the guitar, just go on this jazz tangent. It's this weird chord thing, you're going, what the fuck? Sort of musical pretzel. Meanwhile, there's only one other dude in the band who's playing any instrument of note, except for the flute, right?
Oh, God.
Would be Clive Bunker, and he's just holding down the drum groove. But meanwhile, dude, these guys are out in left field with the strings. The verticals are going nuts. So let's play Nothing Is Easy, and dig this, man. Oh, Clive Bunker goes ape shit the entire song, which is awesome.
Beautiful.
A drum fest. 1969.
You're not going to tell me if there's flute or not. You know I have an anxiety.
Oh, there's ass loads of flute. You're going to love. There's a flute fucking solo, dude.
Okay. Well, but at least I know.
You know what? You won't even know.
At least a monster.
This song rocks so hard, you won't even notice it.
Oh, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
Time gets you worried, my friend, it's okay. Just take your life easy and stop all that hurrying. Be happy my way. When tension starts mounting and you've lost count of the pennies you missed, just try hard and see why they're not worried.
rocking. I'll give him that.
All right.
I just can't do the flute.
Hey, Ryan, that tall?
Uh-huh.
That's for the fucking wrestling album, okay? You think about that,
I think you've punished me enough for that.
Yeah. Try that again, bub.
That was a tit for tat, that's for sure.
Tat.
For tit.
Just walk up to some hot chick and go, tat.
You were Wendy Richter and I was the Fabulous Moolah.
All hell broke loose. So what do you think? Come on, seriously.
There's so many positives, but the flute, I can't do the flute. It's awful.
How about that midsection with the jazz, like that dissonant jazz thing that's going on?
The guitar, bass, drums, and vocals and everything, it was great. But that flute just, it's like stabbing me in the ear.
Yeah.
In my, I think it was
my goodness, what a fuss you're making.
The Wizard of Oz. Wow.
But really? Okay, well, we're going to have to get some golden earring then in here next
time. Well, I like golden earring.
They have flute.
Did they?
Yeah, I ever heard Big Tree Blue Sea on the Moontan record?
Yeah. I don't recall it being so offensive.
Oh, what? There's. You just don't like Tull. You're going to like you. You will like Tull.
They're so
you
frustrating.
You will like Jethro Tull.
Well, the mystery boxes are empty.
Yes, thank God,
officially,
right?
We thank you guys very much for tuning in to episode 139. It's officially cruising down and just hit the runway, skidded a little bit.
Wrestling and Tull.
Yeah.
Listen, I thought we ended strong.
So let's.
I don't care what you think.
Let's do the emergency doors and then jump down that big inflatable slide.
It's officially an emergency in here now. The siren has gone off.
Make sure you come over and like us on Facebook and Twitter at Shabby Podcast and keep sharing stuff. You guys are doing an awesome job of that. We really appreciate it. And if you got a moment, go over to iTunes and leave a review. That always helps.
A good one, by the way. Please.
Yeah, 5 stars. Yeah. We will not accept anything less than 5 stars.
Yeah, we will delete you.
Yes.
We can't delete somebody from iTunes. Yeah, let's make some calls.
Can we do that? Can we? Just write nice stuff then, please.
Yeah. Okay. Impossible.
Yeah, Bear's going to kick your ass if you don't.
I know where you live.
Yeah, Bear is our new bodyguard.
The newer, tougher Shabby Road.
That's right. Well, let's thank Bear for hanging out, man. Yeah. That was great.
Dude, nice to meet you.
Really great meeting you. Yes. Yeah, look forward to him being on one of the shows. It's going to be
pretty
fun.
Crash Daddy over there. How
Crash
you doing?
Daddy.
Surviving? Survived this assorted affair?
That's right. And, of course, running the controls back there, doing a great job. Liz Morgan. Thank you so much, Liz.
Right.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And I got my kiss from Liz Morgan, so I'm all good to go.
Oh, he collected. Yeah, see, I told you.
Bear said, if I don't get a kiss from Liz, I'll be disappointed. And Liz, before he was done with that sentence, jumped up and ran across the room and settled the score. And Liz has brought with her that cantankerous old skanky sister of Hal. That's Sal 5000.
Your appeal to my humanity is pointless.
Oh, wow. I have noticed that. So, all right, I guess that's about it, man. I guess we're ready to get on out of here. The mystery boxes are empty, so we are done rolling our blues away, meaning it's time for Liz and I to unlace our roller skates and turn them back into the pimply-faced, aloof teenager behind the counter, A.D. Adams.
How come you have a 9.5? I gave you a 9.
Actually, you gave me a 9 and then a 9.5 for some reason.
That's prison talk, Ryan. Say,
Ryan!
Well, you know, saying sweet goodbyes are so difficult, but not around here. Nah, joke. I kid. I jest. It's almost become ritual, though, gathering Liz's spent cigarette butts to give to the hookers and bums outside after each and every taping of the show. It's kind of like feeding pigeons French fries on a boardwalk. Just grab a handful, fling them wherever, and watch the fisticuffs ensue. Ah, the simple joys. So until next time, I bid you all, even my pal and co-host, Ryan McKay,
hey, Ryan.
A great evening. Happy spinning.
God bless.
Yeah, it's like there's more and more bums out there because of the cigarettes.
Yeah,
that
we attract them.
Hey, I want like some payment for that.
No.
No. A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. nameonanything.com.